This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Investors exhale. From APM in Washington, I'm David Gura, in for David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and the economy at the end of what has been a rocky week for investors, one of the worst in years. No markets were immune. Commodities took a hit as oil prices continued to fall lower. Investors have been concerned about political upheaval, about the spread of Ebola. European markets seem a bit calmer today. All the major indices are trading up. The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker is on the line from London. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, David.
So the markets seem somewhat calmer compared to what they were doing earlier this week. And I wonder what you attribute that to. Is it we got some good data yesterday here in the States about industrial production, about employment. Is it the data? Is it something else?
I think the data are certainly an important part of it. There's also some technical issues about derivative contracts that have perhaps given a little bit of support to European markets. And inevitably, when you get a significant fall, some people may think that it's a good time to buy. But, you know, I think the longer term picture is that markets have been going through a bit of a reevaluation about global growth prospects. And one of the big disappointing elements in that global picture is exactly what's happening in the Eurozone and the prospect that I think many economists think the Eurozone faces, which is one of a fairly long period of very feeble performance.
There's this debate that's playing out between Germany on the one hand saying cut back, tighten your belt, and then a handful of other countries here. I'm talking about Italy and France. It's this debate about austerity that has been going on for quite a long while.
Yes, absolutely. And the European Central Bank has actually suggested that those countries that have got a bit of room to use government spending and taxes to provide some stimulus should do it. There's another line of division, though, I suppose, over monetary policy. Again, Germany on one side and at least some folks in the European Central Bank on the other, where they feel that they could go a lot further, a lot more aggressively. But the main resistance to further, more explicit quantitative easing is coming from Germany, where there are fears about two things. One is the historic memories of hyperinflation back in the 1920s, but also a belief that if you go in and buy government bonds, you're propping up the finances of governments who ought to be doing more to get their own situation in order.
Andrew Walker, the economics correspondent for the BBC. Thank you very much, Andrew. Have a great weekend.
My pleasure, David. Same to you.
And let's do the numbers. In London, the FT 100 is up 0.8% at 6,245. In Germany, the DAX is also up 1.4% at 8,704. And in France, the CAC 40 is up 1.36% at 3,971. Asian markets are mixed. In Japan, the Nikkei closed down 1.4%. And looking at U.S. futures markets here, they're all up. The Dow is up 1% at 16,180. NASDAQ is up 1.44% at 3,797. The midterm elections are just a few weeks away, and according to a new report from the Wesleyan Media Project, campaigns and committees have spent over $917 million on ads. And when all's said and done, it's expected they'll have spent $1 billion to air somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 million ads in House, Senate, and gubernatorial races. This is a payday for local TV stations, but many politicians and political action committees are buying more and more ads on cable. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains why.
If you live in a state with a close race, you know that candidates are carpet-bombing the airwaves with TV ads.
I grew up castrating hogs on an Iowa farm. I'll know how to cut pork.
I'm Matt Rosendale, and this is how I'd look from a government drone.
And this is what I think about it.
But candidates are increasingly airing their campaign antics over cable instead of their local broadcast station. Ken Goldstein teaches political science at the University of San Francisco and is tracking the midterms closely.
There's just not a lot of competitive House races. We're sort of in a dead ball year in terms of House races.
And the House races that are close are in big cities, where it's not efficient to advertise on local TV. Plus, there aren't as many competitive races for governor, and those are mostly fought on local airwaves. But long-term trends also give cable an edge over local TV.
Now we can do targeting that we couldn't do before.
David Karp teaches political communication at George Washington University. He says local broadcast TV is broad and scattershot. But now cable set-top boxes tell campaigns exactly what voters are watching, so campaigns can tailor their ads.
So that would allow them to deliver an advertisement to one neighbor and a different advertisement to a different neighbor, ideally.
For example, voters in one district might like watching reruns of old shows like Mork and Mindy.
Until next week, Nanu.
Of course, that show is from back in the 80s, before cable started taking political advertising away from local broadcasters. Now, don't get me wrong, local TV still rakes in the most cash, but it's only grown a little from the last midterms in 2010, according to Elizabeth Wilner of Kantar Media.
Local TV's heyday is over in that these great gains we saw in local TV ad spending for politics cycle over cycle probably slowing and eventually will plateau.
Whereas spending for political ads on cable this election is expected to nearly double. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Finally, according to the Financial Times, Google's Political Action Committee has spent $1.43 million in this election cycle. That is slightly more than Goldman Sachs has spent. Eric Schmidt, Google's executive chairman, has given more than $500,000. So far, the tech sector has given more than $22 million, and those donations have been split pretty evenly between Republicans and Democrats. The FT says what we're seeing here is a broader buildup of the tech industry's presence in Washington as companies try to influence policy on immigration, taxes, not to mention privacy issues. In Washington, I'm David Gura with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.